Hey everyone, my name is Xiaowei Star, and I have the pleasure of being your host for today's episode of From Here with a View, a We Are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast. Today's guest is the incredibly talented artist, Kristen Gentry. Kristen Gentry works as a Choctaw artist, writer, curator, and educator. They work at the First Americans Museum in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. She works to create art as cultural preservation for her southeastern Choctaw tribal culture. She creates watercolor and acrylic paintings, jewelry, and also works as a printmaker. She often produces fashion shows for First American designers and photographs First American peoples in their traditional and contemporary regalia and clothing. They are a registered artist for the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. They live in Oklahoma City with her daughter, Jewel Shooting Star. Hi, Kristen. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, first, I'd love to start with talking about your inspiration for your art. So you're an artist in many, many different ways. You work across a lot of different media, from painting, printmaking, jewelry making. You're a writer, curator, et cetera, et cetera. I'd love to hear more about where that initial inspiration came from and maybe some of the critical evolution points in your artistic journey.
I always tell people that I grew up in a family of artists. My grandparents were woodcarvers. My grandfather was a carpenter, so he could do both. He could build like giant structures, homes, barns. Then he could also do like fine art, wooden sculptures. And it was James Orne Hoover, and he actually founded the Eastern Oklahoma Woodcarvers Association. And then my mother was a writer, and she also did a lot of like sewing. And so they would do art booths together often. So I kind of grew up in an art market world versus like an art gallery kind of perspective. So I saw like living, working artists that was what they did for a living. And then my dad, he was an architectural draftsman. So I kind of had access to really cool art supplies and then like giant pieces of paper, like leftover drafts that I could like draw on the back of. So I was just kind of like surrounded by it. So it was just like innate for me. And then like, I've just always been like drawing and sketching and writing stories, making books. It was kind of just like part of who I was my whole life. So it was like a natural kind of progression for me to go into it professionally as a career. And so I started with art education in college. I did my fine arts degree in painting and printmaking. And then I started teaching art. So that was kind of the education route I went. And then I would go into being an artist full time. And then I went back to graduate school, had my kiddo. So I've had like, it's changed where either I'm a full-time artist or I'm a part-time artist, but I've always kept that going in some fashion.
So amazing.
Oh, thank you. And I was going to say like the inspiration for my specific art pieces, I kind of have two different bodies of works right now going on. One is a lot of the pieces that I showed for different markets for Seeds in Santa Fe. And then when Seeds had our exhibition at Form and Concept, I'm also in Santa Fe. So I have also grown up gardening with my family. Again, my grandparents, parents, it was just part of like my growing up culture. So always around plants. And I love that. I'm always around flowers, growing my own food. And then as I got older, I got really interested in learning about food sovereignty, those ancestral seeds, and seeing like those seeds for like my specific tribal culture for the southeastern part of the U.S. when all of our tribes were removed to Oklahoma. Some of those seeds came with us. Some of the women would sew them in the lining of their skirts along the Trail of Tears. So somebody, one of my specific ancestors all those years ago, saved like a specific Choctaw squash. Isito is the Choctaw River squash. And they saved that. And like then we grew it here in Oklahoma. And then through like people saving that throughout time. And then now I can grow that. And like my daughter's been able to eat that food. Like, I don't know, that specific connection with seeds and plant life. It's not just my own culture. It's like, you know, all of our tribal cultures around the world, all of our indigenous populations, the food we grow, the meals we have with those foods, being with nature, being with our hands in the earth. it's such an important part of everything. So for that to be in my art, that's always kind of where my art inspiration starts at, like the nature point, whether like those designs might be represented maybe on regalia, dance fans, the way we dance, the directions we dance. My art has a lot of circles in it for that. Circles are a big part of my specific culture, and then most other tribal cultures as well. And then the plant life, the insects, because I need those pollinators. I do a whole lot of work about pollinators. That's a really, it's a great starting point, because at the surface, people just see my art and they may see pretty colors or flowers, like, okay, it's floral paintings. Someone may not recognize that that is native art. And so that becomes an education point for me. Kind of, I get to tell them and show them, you know, that we're contemporary people. We would have continually progressed. We would have contemporary art. That concept of art looking native, like potentially my art doesn't look native. I don't get a whole lot of pushback on that now, thanks to artists that have come before me that had to go through that, like Oscar Howe, those concepts. But I still get to do that because sometimes I'll be in an art gallery and I'm the only native artist. A lot of the gallery world, fine art world, tends to be non-native at times. So I always try to have that in my art. Like, it'll maybe look like something at the surface, but then there's a lot more to it. And I think that also goes back into culture again. I get to go into the storytelling. I get to tell what all of that means. And then when people from my tribal culture come up, I don't have to go as in-depth in that. Like, they can see that. They already know that. So then that kind of makes me feel like, okay, that was a successful painting. The people that are supposed to understand it do. Whether someone likes it aesthetically or not isn't always a goal, but if they understand like those concepts and kind of give me a chance to kind of explain all that or not, sometimes all they're going to do is look at it and walk away. So I have to kind of, you know that at the surface that I'm not always going to get that. So that's probably where becoming a writer comes in and all those other things, curating, getting to tell stories.
Thank you for that. It's really clear in your art that your personal art and culture and agriculture, and specifically like preservation of or continuing on with heirloom seeds, all of that is interconnected. And that's really beautiful to hear you explain it. I'd love to look at some of your art and just get a bit of description from you. The first piece I would love for you to share about is Sandia, the 11 by 14 acrylic and ink on canvas. And this piece is in the collection of Wilson Pipestem. Would you talk a little bit about this for us?
Sure. So that piece I started when I actually lived in Rio Rancho. It's right next to Albuquerque in New Mexico. And so most people know that there's mountains and they're called Sandia Mountains in Albuquerque there. So as the sun sets on those mountains, it often becomes a really pretty watermelon-y pink color, and Sandia, the Spanish word for watermelon. So I'd wake up to those and see them every day driving. So I was like, I need that in my artwork in some way. And I don't do a lot of blanketed like landscape per se. So I needed a different way to kind of express that. And so I went with the Sandia, that kind of really like special sunset glow time, the prime time of day where the mountains are just that beautiful pink color. Kind of that's where that color for that painting comes from. And then I love wildflowers. I love the flowers that, you know, may have started on the East Coast and got brought across to the whole rest of the country, whether through Indian removal or colonialism, either way. But those, I've always connected with wildflowers. So I have wildflowers painted down that. Oftentimes that's the part where I start on a painting. I kind of pick what flower I'm going to do, wildflower. And then I try to make like that. Typically it's some type of motion through the painting. It may be like a straight line, maybe like a swirl that's representative of Choctaw, Southeastern culture, wind, air, water, kind of those concepts. So, and then after that, then I start looking for positive and negatives that's coming out of those shapes. What can the background be turned into? Sounds kind of funny, but like, you know, let the painting tell me what it wants to be, and just work on balancing that composition. And I try to use geometric patterning that comes from my tribal culture to fill in those spots and then kind of create a new composition out of that between the floral and the geometric. So the geometric is like a really zoomed in version of all of the nature concepts, like the sacred geometry, all of that is there. And then you zoom out and you can like see flowers. So I always think of it as you're simultaneously seeing like the macro, micro, all at once in one painting. But I know when Mr. Pipestone purchased that, it was really special to me when people from our own communities come and support. I don't think I'm like an emerging artist, that I'm not like 100 all the way at the end, like tip of my career type of artist yet. I'm still like in the middle, and so it's nice to be supported like that. And so that piece, you know, it's a good memory from a time I spent a portion of my life in another state.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing. The next piece is Winged Things, the Bat. It's a 6x12 inch acrylic on ink wood from Indigipop X in Albuquerque, New Mexico, formerly Indigenous Comic-Con with Dr. Lee Francis, Red Planet Comic and Books. Could you talk a little bit about this piece?
Yes. Okay, so that piece is like totally deviated from my typical bodies of work. It was originally Indigenous Comic-Con. The Comic-Con title has now been trademarked, so the convention transformed into an Indigenous pop exposition instead. So I was like, well, how do I mix my art into like pop art? So I just went through, and at the time my daughter, she was like really obsessed with Batman. So that was a really fun piece. I have a laser cutter, so I'm able to cut out shapes. So that was cut out of wood. And then I was able to paint it. I kind of do all of my paintings in that similar manner. I'll do some type of abstracted background with the colors that's going to be the main colors for the piece later on. And then I do those main images on top and then the patterns. So that show was like amazing in the sense it wasn't a like high fine art show. It was all these different fandoms, movies, just all the different things from pop culture, comic books, but it was like Indigenous. So it was really cool to see like all across the country what all these Indigenous artists, cosplayers, like I said, graphic novels, board games, TV shows, all that stuff. It was just such a cool experience to be in that, in a totally different experience than I'd ever had with art.
That's super fun. I love how playful you are with your work. I would love to hear a bit about Tofapi, The First Part of Summer. It's an 11x18 watercolor on wood, featured in the We Are the Seeds exhibit at Form and Concept last year. Could you tell us a bit about that piece?
So up until that point, I had done all of my watercolor pieces like that on like normal watercolor paper, which I absolutely love working on paper. But all the rest of my work was, it was being done on wood, cradled wood, usually 2 inches thick. And so I was like, I kind of wondered if I would be able to do that same kind of style, but on wood. So that was like an experimental piece for me. And I did that and it worked out great. and that piece, again, that has, to me, it, whenever I get into that kind of like the other one, that Sandia pink color, I always feel like that's that either sunrise, sunset time. And that first part of summer, for me, that's, you know, when things are starting to grow. I've already moved my seedlings out from spring into summer. Those flowers are coming. And that one, you can really see the dance movement. I kind of saw that one as if like you were an aerial view looking down at a dance circle, a different dance circles. And so you can see that with those triangles that are pushing direction for your eyes to look through it. And I try to be conscious of which directions people would be dancing. And I also thought it kind of looked like if you were, again, looking aerial, all of our skirts, people dance in skirts, that it would look like that kind of flared out.
Awesome. I'd love to hear about your earrings, these acrylic and antique silver ones, also featured in the We Are the Seeds exhibit at Form and Concept. The photography is courtesy of Form and Concept in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Can you tell us a little bit about these?
So I originally started making earrings by hand painting everything, and I still do that sometimes, but for as quickly as people were needing them, I wasn't able to keep up with that demand by just hand painting at all. So I invested in a laser cutter, and so I started then doing more digital drawings to be able to create the same ideas, but then quicker. So that's where those came from, and I just started looking at the antique silver that was used on like ball and cone earrings, and that's a little more Midwest Plains in a contemporary way, and that also helps when I'm doing markets, exhibition shows, to have varying price points. And that's really important to me so that everybody, especially people that are learning, they might not be able to afford what I would charge for a painting, full regalia, or something of that manner, but they might be able to spend, you know, $20 to $50 on some jewelry, some earrings, and then have something tangible, something that's meaningful, and something that they can also use as an educational point, and I can kind of talk to them about that. And it's, since it's like on your body, on your human, everybody sees it. So it does, it starts conversations. And I really love that, especially like the snakes. People are always so intrigued that are non-native. They're typically like, well, why would you want to wear snakes? Like, is there, I think people see them as so, like a negative, like, so it's nice to kind of talk about why the snakes are important to me and my culture. And then me personally, the reason I started doing snake art, my mom has passed now, but when she was still alive, she told me that when she was a baby, they used to call her Cynthia Tanakabe. And that means crooked snake. So I guess she didn't crawl straight. So she, I guess it looked like a snake when she was crawling. So I just kind of always had that in my mind. And so I've created like coloring book pages about that concept. It's the jewelry. And again, I get to use again the geometric patterning to create composition. And even with the earrings, as opposed to like paintings, I still get to do my positive and negatives and use that to create composition. And I think that concept I carry, it's part of my methodology. It kind of goes across all the artwork I make.
And could you tell us about what you're wearing today? Because I think you're wearing your own creations too.
I am. So this is jewelry that was featured in Native Max magazine last month, and it was all about Oklahoma fashion. And so I was paired with Leslie Deer. She's also a Southeastern artist, and so I got to do the jewelry for it. And so this is one of the pieces. I wouldn't normally wear such a large statement piece on the daily, but when I might be going to Seeds, going to art markets, wanting to be a little like flashier, we're a very decorated culture. It's one of my favorite parts of us, and that's where I get into Indigenous fashion, fashion shows, photographing families in their traditional and contemporary regalia, all the clothing, and I just really fell in love with that, and that a lot came from Seeds. The way that Seeds did fashion shows was so different than everybody else that I'd ever shot. Typically, just designers create and they show it. For Seeds, the most recent one, we would have the book. So then they created fabric based on the book designs, and then all the designers were able to create a piece from that same fabric. And then that all intertwined with the children's book. I just thought that was, I don't know, it was so cool to me. The venue where Seeds is at the Rail Yards, it just always works so great for fashion shows. Beautiful photography of all the women and men and non-binary relatives, everybody that get to model there. Once I started learning and seeing all the different fashion designs we have, I just like fell in love with it. So I wanted, you know, to be a part of that. So my shirt is also one of my own designs. I have what they call ready to wear. I didn't actually sew it myself. It's like a fabricated piece. So it would be something that wouldn't necessarily be part of a fine art market, but I could do it at a more like arts and crafts powwow kind of scene. It feels really good. It's really special when I see people wearing anything I've made, whether clothing or jewelry. It makes you happy. It's like a little like a jump of joy inside. And then to know that someone's trusting me with our culture and with being able to speak about that through the things they're wearing and that they support that. That's just, it's so good.
It's clear that you're a storyteller in many, through many different channels, through your visual art, through your writing, but then what you're creating, like your outfit today, are also helping people start their own conversations and story sharing in wearing what you've made. So I'd love to talk a bit about just your professional happenings recently, starting first with We Are the Seeds, who you've collaborated with on multiple occasions over the last few years. Would love to hear about how you've collaborated and your experience generally with We Are the Seeds.
So my very first time I ever went to Seeds, I wasn't an artist. I was just there to photograph the fashion show, work with the designers, and I fell in love with it. So then I had to apply to be an artist, and I got accepted. And then I think my second year as an artist, they selected my art to be kind of like the marketing materials. It was on the t-shirts, it was on all the flyers, designs. That was a really fun experience. They took one of my paintings and then like restructured into digital format. And it was just so cool. And I already have my daughter by then, so she got to come and see that. I have photos of her in like my art. It was just really special to be at an event and just see like my art everywhere. And another one of my education points is I always talk about how all Native art doesn't look Southwestern. So I really appreciated a Southeastern artist seeing the art all over in Santa Fe, where you typically see Southwestern art. So I love that little way to have some representation, that there's more than just one style of Native art. And then we all know with pandemic, that put all of our art markets, everything like on hold. We weren't able to gather. But when like Seed totally like was not able, like nothing was able the first year of the pandemic, it got switched into, we had a gallery show at Form and Concept. And that alone has changed my career so much from that show, and getting to have an opening in Santa Fe for me as a, I'll say, mid-range artist, having a gallery in Santa Fe show your art as a Native artist is, it's kind of like once one gallery will say, like, you're good to go. It's kind of like it's easier than for your career to start growing into other spaces. So I was just so blessed that Thailand, she invited me, that I was able to be curated into that exhibition. It meant a lot to me. And I had all those collectors from all over the country, because the exhibition opened during Indian Market. So it was amazing to have that, since we couldn't have our full Seeds. It was still great to see, a lot of the artists that I had been showing with for a couple of years with Seeds at the exhibition, and to see their art in a gallery format. It's a beautiful space. And then I was really, really lucky. They kept me on as an artist after the exhibition. So I'm now represented by that gallery. And I can't describe how good that's been for my career. I just met a lady yesterday. I was at a different art market here. She's like, I saw your artwork at Form and Concept. And what I wanted was like sold out. So that would have never happened without Seeds and without being able to be in that exhibition. And so I'm just so thankful. You never know like what's going to happen from like one thing. I was just going to shoot fashion designers one day and then just fell in love with Seeds. So.
Yeah, you've had a lot of momentum and recent successes. You've had a Starbucks commission. You've sold some work to Deb Holland. I would love to hear from you about what your, maybe some recent successes that you're most excited or proud about, and maybe anything upcoming too.
So one of the things I'm definitely most proud about is that Starbucks commission. When I originally got the very first email for that, I totally thought it was a scam. I didn't believe it. I'm like, okay, whatever. But then like they emailed me back and they're like, okay, this is not a scam. So then of course I was like, okay, it's definitely a scam. But it ended up actually being real. So it's a, it's in Starbucks, it's commissioned by Starbucks, paid for by Starbucks, inside the Sky Tower at the Choctaw Nation Casino in Calera, which is where the Choctaw Cultural Center is. So it's next to it. So I had like that entity, the Choctaw Cultural Center, and then the entity of Starbucks. And like, so that adds in two different teams. When a corporate commission is already a long and difficult process, it was even more difficult. But that also means more people are going in to create something. I felt like even better and that much more support for me. So whereas parts were hard, there were also part extra good parts. So that piece is now hung there. It's 9.5 feet tall. I think it's 4.5 feet wide. And again, it has my like flowers going through. And I did a diagonal direction, and it ended up being in the Starbucks colors, which is really cool. And so I actually painted coffee flowers, and they even let me put a little like sign next that I asked, cause I had like a story to go with it, kind of like when you walk in the morning and like either see your grandparents, you see your parents like drinking coffee at the table. And then when we go to dances, even if it's summertime and it's like 100 degrees outside, people are still drinking coffee. So I just kind of connected that piece, that story, with how coffee was kind of interconnected in our culture. So that was good learning for me. And so when people walk up to that piece, there's some Choctaw language for them, and then there's that connection. They probably notice it's the same colors as Starbucks. So that was really special to me. And then right before I did that commission, I was also commissioned by the Choctaw Cultural Center. I made a piece that's 9.5 feet tall again for them, and I made a piece that goes in our chief and council's formal dining room, and they wanted it to be something about food. So instead of just like food, I went back to what I do. So I did Choctaw squash blossoms. So it's these beautiful yellow blossoms going down the painting, and then they picked a similar color palette to what I'm wearing. So it's a really pretty piece. That was my very first large commission like that. So that was really exciting for me. Both of those happened in 1 year, and I'm so thankful. And I recently had a Deb Holland purchase some jewelry, and hopefully in the next week I'll have some images of her wearing it. I kind of totally did the fangirl. And honestly, the first like 5 minutes, I definitely cried because... it's hard to have all those successes. Like I said earlier, my mom has passed. Both of my parents are actually passed. So it's hard that you can't share good news in that sense. But I have a really good community, and my work community is very supportive of my art. So I still have, you know, people to be excited with me. And like everyone understands how important that is. But to have someone, one, that's Native in our government is amazing. And then that she would, you know, want to wear my jewelry. So that's... I don't know. I still get like all giggly about it. It's really special to me. And then work-wise, so I work at the First Americans Museum. It's been one of the busiest years of my life, for sure. It's been so exciting. We've been able to do I think 4 or 5 different events. I work on the sales side, so I am the assistant manager for our store, our museum store, call it Fam Store, and all of the artists in there, they're all Native. The majority of our vendors are also Native-owned companies, and the artwork in there is artists that are living and working today, and some of those artists are seed artists, so I get to literally help our own culture, you know, grow through that. I get to help artists, you know, put money in their hands, not me specifically, but our museum puts, you know, money in their hands to make a living, to keep our culture going, to support their families. So for me, that's really special to play that part and then create events. We created a winter art market last December. You know, as an artist, what the market needs. So that was a really great experience. And then we just produced an entirely new event that Teton Trade Cloth had never done before. We did an entire fashion summit at the museum. And so that was produced between FAM, Teton Trade Cloth, and then Prados Beauty. So I worked a lot with specifically Pichon Bread to do that fashion show. And in New Mexico with Seeds, you know, Pichon's been a part of that. They're pretty well known for working within the Native fashion world as both a model and a producer. So it was nice to start bringing that Native runway fashion to Oklahoma. It's not as prevalent here. So that was also kind of one of the goals of that fashion summit, to show a different type of our Native world and bring it and then enlarge it out of just the Southwest, so we can keep spreading all the wonderful things that all of our Native artists and makers are doing today.
Wow, that's amazing. So you're making and creating art and curating others' art and managing and helping it get to more into the public and creating this beautiful artistic and commercial community. And that's amazing to promote art. Art for community purposes and for cultural preservation and also for business. It's amazing. Where can people find and purchase your work?
If they want to directly purchase from me, they can go to Creative Native. I say Creative Native with a K, .com. KristenGentry.com works. Kristen has two I's. And let's see, Fabric Museum in Tulsa, Gilcrease, museum as well in Tulsa, Choctaw Cultural Center, Form and Concept in Santa Fe, First Americans Museum. And then I have gallery exhibitions that are at different places. I have a show coming up called Collective Wisdom, and it's, again, Southeastern artist. It's put on by Billy Hensley. He's a Chickasaw artist. And our first showing is going to be traveling. So the first one will be at the Chokemusi Gallery in Ada. And that show is totally new show that I've never done and I've never seen done. Every single piece in that show is a collaboration. So I don't just have art. All the pieces I have in that show were created with other artists. So I created a piece with Hoka Skinnendorr, with Billy Hensley too, and then Natalie Standing Cloud. And that's gonna be a really cool show to see how everybody created art together. So it was a really good experience, and I think it's created really great art and something different to do.
Amazing. What advice or guidance do you have for Indigenous youth who are interested in perhaps pursuing a career in the arts?
So I'm pro art school or not art school to be an artist. Either way, you're going to still have to put in the same amount of hours practicing your craft over and over and over and over and trying so many different things. Try all the different mediums. Try stuff you've never tried before. Just keep experimenting until you get to something that both you love and like you feel good about. And you probably have I want to keep this. I don't want to give it to anybody because you love it so much. Like, when I get to that point with a piece, to me, that's kind of when a piece, I think, is done. If I never really get to that where I'm just like, then I may paint over it and start something new. So that, too, like, don't be afraid if something you made, you didn't like it, it didn't work, or perhaps nobody ever purchased it. You can always make it into something else. That's a great way. If you go the art school route, find an art school in an area that you can still be connected to your culture, even if it's not your specific tribe. Being in a same kind of like-minded community will just help you grow and ensure that your art isn't native by default, just because it is by default, like as a native artist, but with intentionally making it that way, I think is really special and really important to us as artists, Native artists specifically. We kind of battle more than just mainstream gallery. We have an extra layer added. People want to know that when you're standing there in front of your art that you know about your culture too. And non-Native artists don't necessarily have to have that. They can just have their art. They can just be whatever. They can just paint dogs. And if that's what they're known for, that's all they have to do per se. They don't have to have all the cultural background that we do. So art is a great way to learn all of that. And especially if you don't know a lot about your culture, you as an artist, you have the tools to learn about your culture through your own art. Like if you think of like genetic memory, like you may not even realize it, which I didn't. Like I look back at sketchbooks, especially as a child, designs I sketched naturally from, I had never seen them as far as I knew. And then when I got older and researched, maybe saw pieces from different mounds that have been like excavated, those same exact designs I had just sketched naturally were inherently already either Choctaw or Southeastern designs. And that kind of like blew my mind when that happened, that those designs were already inside me without knowing it. And I thought that was really cool. It was a nice connection to my ancestors. And I hope everybody has that at some point as a Native artist, they get to see that happen with their own art. And so, yeah.
Kristen, your work and who you are as a person and as an Indigenous artist is really inspiring and exciting, and we're all looking forward to seeing what's next for you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, thank you, Yakuki. I just appreciate being here and still being a part of Seeds, and thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you all for tuning in, and thank you to Kristen Gentry. I'm Shaway Starr, and you've been listening to From Here with a View, a We Are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast.
From Here with a View, a We Are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast is produced by Michelle St. John with music by Zachariah Julian and original logo art by Jason Weesaw. This podcast is funded in part by Independence Public Media Foundation.